नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवत गीता एज़ इट इज़ चैप्टर 5 कर्म योग एक्शन इन कृष्ण कॉन्शियसनेस टेक्स्ट नंबर 29 Bhaktaram jaga tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suridam sarva bhutanam gyatva mam shantim prichati Bhaktaram jaga tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram Suridam sarabhutanam Kyatvamam shantim richati Bhaktaram The beneficiary Jaga of sacrifices Tapasam and penances and austerities Sarvaloka of all planets and the demigods thereof Mahaishwaram, the Supreme Lord. Suridam, the benefactor. Sarva, of all. Bhutanam, the living entities. Gyatva, thus knowing. Mam, me, Lord Krishna. Shantim, relief from material pangs. Richati, one achieves. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Purport. The conditioned souls within the clutches of illusory energy are all anxious to obtain peace in the material world, but they do not know the formula for peace which is explained in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. The greatest peace formula is simply this. Lord Krishna is the beneficiary in all human activities. Men should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord because He is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than He. He is greater than the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, Svetasvatara Upanishad 6-7, the Supreme Lord is described as Tam Ishvaranam Paramam Maheshwaram. Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be the lords of all they survey, but actually they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator, and all living entities, including the great demigods, are His subordinates. One can obtain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. The fifth chapter is the practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how Karma Yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with a complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is bhakti yoga, and jnana yoga is the path leading to bhakti yoga. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Absolute, and the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God as his fragmental part and parcel. He comes into contact with Maya illusion due to the desire to lord it over Maya, and that is the cause of his many sufferings. As long as he is in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter, for it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. The more one is advanced, the more he is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. Everything depends on one's practical performances of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage or Brahma or Nirvana. The Eightfold Yoga's mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation and the practice of yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which alone can award peace to the human being. It is the highest perfection of life. Bhoktaram dukatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam kyatvamam shantim richati. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Namo Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tiramane Namaste Sarasvatun Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvisesa Shunyavadi Paskatya De Sitarane. In this verse it says that the living entities in this material world are all anxious to obtain peace. But they do not know the formula for peace, which is explained here. That under the spell of illusion, the living entities are trying to be the lords of all they survey, but actually they're dominated by the material energy. So this takes some contemplation to understand this, that we ourselves are spiritual souls, and therefore naturally we want an eternal life full of bliss and knowledge. That is, more or less, most people search for that knowledge which will give one the best possible life and the most happiness. The idea currently, especially in modern so-called society, is that the more one can dominate the material energy, then the more one will become free from the material energy. Therefore, everyone is trying to dominate the material energy in different ways, in the hopes of becoming free from it, to conquer the material energy. Therefore, there are so many attempts at building things, constructing, inventing things that supposedly will free us from the encumbrances in material energy. When I was around 10 years old, I read in one comic book that by the year 2000, they'd have a pill, and if one takes the pill, then he'd live forever. So it's a few years away, and I'm sure they're still working on it. But it's not very likely they'll succeed. And undoubtedly, the person who wrote the article is long dead by now. So this is the nature of illusion. Everyone wants to live forever because we are eternal. And everyone wants knowledge of how to be happy because that's the original knowledge we all have. That's the pure knowledge of the soul, he knows exactly how to be happy. And here it explains that the main mistake is that we are trying to dominate the material energy. So this has also been explained in different ways in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, dhyayato vishaya pumsam. That as soon as one takes the consciousness of dominating the material energy, he becomes covered by illusion. Just like as soon as one commits a criminal act, then at once he becomes a criminal. And he's subjected to the laws of the state. But the laws of material energy are much more subtle and much more exacting. Therefore, as soon as one wants to become the Lord, separate from Krishna, then at once he's arrested by the material illusory energy and he is bound by illusion. Jayato Vishayam Pum Sangas Te Shupa Jayate. That is, he at once becomes covered by lust, by the illusory energy in the form of lust, and therefore he becomes covered, his real consciousness becomes somewhat covered, and he is forced to act in ways which are different from his original spiritual position. Jayato Visham Pum Sangas Te Shubhajayate, Sangas Sanjayate Kama, Kama Krodo Vijayate. So once consciousness becomes covered, material energy acts in two different ways. One is the covering potency, and the other is the throwing potency. So the living entity's consciousness becomes covered by illusion, and he's forced to act in different ways for sense gratification. But he takes this as his life, because that's the only life he knows. He struggles in the material world under illusion to obtain a complete life of sense gratification, and becomes more and more frustrated and bewildered, because he's never satisfied no matter how hard he works to achieve his objectives. Therefore, it mentions here that one should first try to understand that we are not the controllers of the material energy, that the material energy is not functioning under our supervision, that there is a supreme being who is dominant, who dominates over the material energy. Every person with any intelligence, any person, can see that there are so many laws in material nature. Even the scientists must say that there are laws in material nature, or else they're wasting their time. Why would they be looking or examining the material energy unless they're trying to find some laws? Although they say it's come out of nothing, still they say there are so many laws behind it. So whenever we have a law, there must be a lawgiver. It's a fact that the door and the floor are not getting together and making laws. It is persons, people who make laws. As I once told my father, who was arguing with me about this, I said, according to the scientists, one of their laws is the law of entropy, which means that material energy left by itself simply becomes more and more random. So nowadays they have some scientists, they're trying to speculate that maybe if you leave material energy enough random, then by some unknown law it will become more organized. But in any case, even if it becomes more organized by some unknown law, still, that means that there must be some divine arrangement by which unorganized things become organized by some law. So there's a lawgiver. If we see the planets moving their orbits exactly on time, the sun rising at the appointed time, snowflakes falling precise geometric patterns, we must conclude that there's intelligence behind the universe, and since there's intelligence, there must be a person who's intelligent. We don't find intelligence unless there are living entities using that intelligence for some intelligent objective. Therefore, with some sane, intelligent vision of the material world, we must conclude that there is a predominating personality or personalities above us who are controlling the material energy, and we ourselves are being controlled by them. In the second canto, second chapter, The Lord in the Heart, Srila Prabhupada gives, in text number 35, a very exacting explanation of the super soul, how we can realize that we're not this body, how we can see that the body is made out of different elements, which form different senses, and we ourselves are the perceiver or the seer, and we see ourselves. We don't see ourselves, but we see those combinations of material energy. That we see everything except for ourselves in the material world. We're conscious, but we're conscious of this body, and we're conscious of the things outside of the body, and this body and the things outside of the body more or less made out of the same elements. But none of these elements have any consciousness. Only we, the perceivers, have any consciousness. But conditioned life means that we can't perceive, we can't see, we can't hear, we can't touch, nor can we move about with our legs or any other organ unless we do so through this body. So this is called conditioned life. Although we are the perceiver and we are doing things, or at least this body is, but we are completely conditioned by this body. We are completely conditioned by our present arrangement of material senses. Therefore, we feel dissatisfaction in the present limited state of materially conditioned experience. So this is the indication of the spirit, of the fact that we're spiritual. Because the flaw is not dissatisfied being a flaw. If you ask the flaw, my dear flaw, so many people are stepping on you all day long, do you ever feel bad about this? We know you're very tolerant, but did you ever have it? No, the floor doesn't mind because it doesn't have a mind. It's unconscious. You can take a knife and stab the wall and it won't protest. Of course, Sridhar Chaitanya Prabhu will protest. And if you stab someone else, they'll also protest. Because it is conscious living, is a living entity who's conscious, and he's conscious of things outside himself. But now he's unhappy or dissatisfied because what he's conscious of does not give him either an eternal position, nor does it give him full consciousness, full understanding of who he is or what his purpose is, nor does it give him complete satisfaction or bliss. And we should not trust any future, however pleasant. Idle conversation regarding future development of matter into spirit is just so much speculation. The scientists, they cannot produce life from chemicals now. They have no indication it was ever produced in the past. And they don't know how to do it in the future. It is simply so much idle speculation and talk. There's so much life already. So even if they could create even one blade of grass, what would be their credit? There's billions of blades of grass. But they can't even produce, as we've heard very often, one egg. They can analyze the chemicals in an egg. There's not so many chemicals. Anyone who cooks can see that, you know, this little yellow substance, little white substance. So they can analyze it and put it together, put it around some shell and put it into the incubator and produce a chicken. But they can't do that. All they can do is speculate about, well, in the future we can do this. But even they can't even produce one blade of grass. They can't produce anything. All they can do is produce bills that people have to pay for their experiments. Actually, as we said before, that the cow, it takes some grass and eats it, and it produces milk. So at least the cow is producing something valuable that doesn't really cost anything. So actually, the cow should be awarded the Nobel Prize for chemistry because it's actually doing some marvelous thing. But no chemist can take grass and produce milk from it. So the cow is actually a much greater scientist, much more beneficial. And if we examine it further, in other words, if this is all seen by use of our intelligence. By using our intelligence, we can see that I am different from this body and that simply I'm conscious of this body and this body is limiting my consciousness. And we can also understand that there is some user and also director of intelligence. That intelligence is all-pervading. Every living entity has their intelligence. For instance, even an ant has its intelligence. An ant may be walking on the floor looking for some prasadam, and we're also looking for some prasadam. So our intelligence are not that much different in some respects. So intelligence is all-pervading, and intelligence gives one direction, just like the teacher gives direction to the student, or the father gives direction to the son. So that all-pervading intelligence is known as the super soul, who's in everyone's heart. So we can continue to put into study this philosophy, namely that there are three identities, namely matter, spirit, and super spirit, And therefore dovetail our intelligence with that of the super spirit or the supreme spirit. That's known as Krishna consciousness. Or we can choose to remain in the ignorant misconception of identifying ourselves with this body and therefore serve the dictations of the mind and senses. That is our free will. And here it mentions that is more or less what's being mentioned here. That we can think, let me become the master of the material energy and dominate it and enjoy it. Or I can see that actually I am always a dependent spirit soul. There is no question of dominating or mastering the material energy. It is simply illusion to think like that. Instead, I should dovetail my intelligence with that of the Supreme Spirit and serve Him with the same energy. Desire to serve Him with that material energy. And this way, one will become free from illusion. And by becoming free from illusion, one will realize that one is eternal. Therefore, there is no fear of death. And one will become free from ignorance, and therefore there's no question of lack of consciousness or awareness, and one will become actually joyful. So here it says in the other part that there are three different parts of Krishna consciousness, known as Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. So Karma Yoga means that everyone here is trying to gain something. Generally, everyone is looking for a victim for his sense gratification. So everyone is trying to gain some ability, some potency to find victims for his sense gratification. By using one's intelligence, one tries to, for instance, one gets a job and he makes money. And the idea of making money is that with that money he can buy so many varieties of sense gratification. He can buy his wife, he can buy his children, and they, in return, they will gratify his senses. Therefore, in Vedic culture, the wife and children are known as legitimate pickpockets. Because if a man on the street, he comes with a gun, and he takes your money, then immediately you feel very bad about it, and hopefully you call the police. But if your wife and children come, and they take every last cent, then you smile and think, oh, they love me so much. So therefore, they're legitimate pickpockets. The idea is one thinks, let them take my money, and in return, I'll enjoy them in some way. So everyone is looking for some victim, working hard to get the energy to buy or exploit some victim. But Karma Yoga means that one understands that everything here belongs to Krishna and therefore everything should be utilized in Krishna's service. So that Karma Yoga means ultimately that one must perform jaga or a sacrifice. So in the Bhagavad Gita there are so many different types of sacrifices recommended to satisfy Vishnu or Krishna, and if one executes those sacrifices, so many awards await one in the future. But ultimately one will see that even if I get some reward in the future by going through some austerity or sacrifice, then what am I supposed to do with that award? That even if I try to enjoy that award, then immediately I become, again, in the future, subjected to the reactions of trying to enjoy in the material world and dominate. Therefore, one will see that ultimately one has to keep on sacrificing and sacrificing. But what is the ultimate purpose of sacrifice? So there it explains Jnana Yoga. The purpose of sacrifice is ultimately to get free from material bondage and to come to the higher platform of consciousness. It is not to gain something in the material world. So that is called Jnana Yoga. Cultivating knowledge of one's real identity apart from the material conception of life. But even when one becomes fully conscious, one will not become fully satisfied. It is not that simply by developing our consciousness, our awareness, we'll feel complete satisfaction, because we're not simply consciousness, we're also emotion. So consciousness or knowledge is meant to develop our finer emotions. not to, we become very conscious, very powerful, and therefore we utilize it to degrade our emotions. But no, it's meant to purify our emotions. Intelligence is meant to purify our emotions, so we come to the platform of bhakti, or loving feelings. And that consciousness, when it's directed towards Krishna and the spirit of devotion, eventually culminates in bhakti, or love for Krishna and love for everyone and everything in relationship to Krishna. Free from this, in full consciousness and without material attachment. So here it says that we are actually spiritual beings, and that our real problem is that we have this desire to lord it over Maya, illusion. So as long as we have this body, we have to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness doesn't say that immediately, because we are not this body, we should stop eating, we should go on a 30-day fast, or we should get rid of this body by fasting to death. And that, no, it doesn't say anything like that. We should stop sleeping. Prabhu, you're about to go to sleep. I haven't slept for 3 days. That's all right, but you're not that body. Don't let it go to sleep. Keep it up. No, that one has to execute work in terms of material necessities, but at the same time, one should utilize his time, that one should try to minimize his material necessities, and at the same time, try to elevate himself by practice of spiritual activities. And that if one practices focusing his consciousness upon Krishna and engaging the activities of devotional service, then gradually one will make progress. And the more progress one makes, the more one becomes free from the influence of the material energy. And then Krishna consciousness brings one, however, into spiritual life even while one is within this jurisdiction of matter, for it is arousing a spiritual existence by practice in the material world. So here it says also that the Lord is not partial towards anyone. It is not that some people are just lucky, or somehow or another Krishna loves some people more than others, that Krishna is equal to everyone. Everything depends upon one's practical performance of activities in Krishna consciousness, and which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. So these activities, rising early in the morning, chanting Hare Krishna, if one takes them seriously, although they may be difficult to perform, and something we're generally not used to, trying to control our mind, trying to become detached from material ideas, although we're not very practiced, but if we practice like that, then gradually we'll be able to control our senses and mind and conquer the influence of desire and anger. Tada rajas tamo bhava kama lova dayastraye cheta eta anavidam sthitam sattve prasidate. Thus, by such practice, one becomes free from the modes of ignorance and passion, and thus material lust and avarice are diminished. And when these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness. Evam prasanamanaso bhagavad bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva vijnana mukta sangasya jayate. Becomes enlivened by devotional service and understands the science of Godhead perfectly. So again, these three things: patience, being situated in the spiritual position, becoming enlivened by the devotional service, enthusiastic, and at the same time understanding the science of Godhead perfectly, which is full confidence in Krishna consciousness. So this can be achieved by the steady practice of hearing, because it all begins with Srinvatam Svakata Krishna, hearing regularly about Krishna. And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage or in Brahma Nirvana. Not to become influenced by material passions, etc. It's very subtle, because this material consciousness is very subtle, but by practice one can gradually become free from these influences and become more and more consistently and deeply absorbed in remembering Krishna with the attitude of serving him in a practical way. So this is the whole purpose of the Eightfold Yoga system known as Ashtanga Yoga, which brings one generally into consciousness of Krishna. But Bhakti Yoga goes a step forward, which to develop an emotional relationship with Krishna, which is based on love. So we'll read the verse again. Poktaram jagatapasam sarvalokameheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richati. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So this is a process of becoming conscious of Krishna, and the way of doing that is to utilize one's energies for Krishna, to go through austerities for Krishna, such as the austerities of preaching, or serving the Supreme Lord as a deity in the temple, and that Krishna will ultimately make all arrangements, because he is actually the friend of everyone, so that we and others can make steady progress in going back to the spiritual world if we actually desire like that. And if we desire, if we actually execute, if we perform the activities of devotional service and become conscious of Krishna, the result is that we'll not only become peaceful, but we'll actually become happy. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? So we don't have one? Yes, because there's some tendency to want to exploit others. Because we're practicing to become devotees. Therefore, there may be some gross or subtle desire. Prabhupada said that Westerners, especially, of course, it's all around the world, have a tendency to three things caused by the modes of ignorance and passion. One of them is they're addicted to illicit sex. They like to fight with each other, and they have a tendency to want to change everything. So from lust comes anger, and from anger becomes bewilderment. So these follow nicely. So we can see that there's that tendency to be situated, to act according to lust or anger or delusion. So the more we don't fight with each other, but engage in service to each other, the more we actually have some devotional sentiment towards each other based upon spiritual vision, and the more we strictly follow the rules and regulations of devotional service, then the result is that the more we're actually acting as devotees. Anything else? Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.